In a few moments, we're going to be joined on the phone by Elise Hoag, who is the Global Finance Campaign Director for the Rainforest Action Network. But before we go to Elise, I just want to start by talking a little bit about this topic. In April of 2001, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal titled "Indonesia's Financial Woes Find Another Victim, Its Forests. Huge paper mills ramp up output to pay debts. Illegal logging spreads." And this is in Indonesia. This is in a town called Angkasa, Indonesia. "The country's once abundant rainforests have been ravaged for years by massive demand for timber from pulp and paper companies, plywood producers, and sawmills. Now they face two new threats to their survival: corporate debt and rampant illegal logging operations that are wiping out forests the size of my home state, New Jersey, every year." Every year, forests the size of New Jersey, which is it's a pretty big state, are being wiped out every year because of debt. So that's when I realized that Wall Street, because of their debt practices, are destroying the environment. And I was always hoping to talk about this here, and now we have an opportunity. Let me grab some headphones, if I may.
Have you ever
I'll steal yours?
Gone to? Have you ever seen? I've never been to a rainforest, but I did go up to I guess it would be called the temperate zone in San Francisco, or outside of San Francisco, to the redwoods. Have you ever seen those?
I briefly went through some redwoods on a little train cruise from Santa Cruz to but not the big ones. Yeah, I bet you were talking about.
Yeah. I mean, you know, these are some of the oldest living things, if not the oldest living things on the planet. Right. There's some. It's a spiritual experience to be amongst these living things, and to think that people would just tear them down to make a newspaper is, you know, it's obscene.
Absolutely. Not just a newspaper, that would be okay, but how about the junk mail that we get? It's right. It's incredible, you're right.
Or a park bench.
Anything.
Yeah.
Right, anything. And can we get Elise on the line?
Sure.
Yeah, great. She's on?
Mm-hmm.
Elise?
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you guys this morning?
We're great. Thanks for joining
us.
And Elise has been on Democracy Now! A couple of times. The last time was in April. And we're very pleased to have you here today. And usually you're out in San Francisco, is that correct?
I am usually out. Well, I'm based out of San Francisco. I'm lucky that this work takes me all over the world.
Right. And could you tell us a little bit about the Rainforest Action Network?
Rainforest Action Network was founded in 1985 by Randy Hayes in an effort to preserve what's left of our rapidly diminishing old-growth forests around the world and provide support for their traditional inhabitants. So that means not only the 90% of the land-based species that reside in our old-growth forests, but as well the dwindling numbers of indigenous people around the world. Those indigenous cultures are being wiped out as the rainforests are being wiped out. So we've been around for about 17 years. There are 25 of us working out of our San Francisco office, and we have, you know, affiliates that we work with around the world. And we do our best to really use every avenue possible to achieve our mission. So frequently what that means is holding the corporations in the United States that are responsible for the destruction of the rainforest and all the associated ills, including climate change and global warming, to holding them accountable to the large number of their consumers in the United States who don't wish to see our own corporations behaving in that manner.
Right, and you definitely have been making some ground here. I have a little copy of looks like an ad that was placed somewhere. How leading U.S. companies are saving ancient rainforests without ever chaining themselves to a tree, which is what you guys do, along with other things. And some of these companies, you know, I'm happy to see them on this list because you don't really hear too many good things about them. 3M, AMD, which is Advanced Micro Devices, Bristol-Myers Squibb, Dell Computer, Estee Lauder, Hallmark, Hewlett-Packard, IBM, Johnson & Johnson, which is actually my favorite company. Seriously, I'm not being facetious. Kinko's, Levi Strauss, Liz Claiborne, Lockheed Martin, McGraw-Hill Companies, Mitsubishi, Mother Jones magazine, Mutual of Omaha, National Geographic, Nike, Pacific Gas and Electric, Patagonia, I don't know who they are, Quantum Corp, Seventh Generation, Starbucks, United Stationers, and Utney Reader, another magazine. So you guys really have been making some ground, I guess.
Yeah, I think what we've seen is, you know, over 400 top companies taking the old growth free pledge in the United States. You know, some of those did it because they recognized the tide of the market forces, that their customers no longer wanted to deal with corporations who were responsible for this type of environmental destruction. Some of them needed a bit more pressure to see the light, as we say. We see our role as funneling that consumer concern at the necessary and responsible targets.
Right, that's great. And, of course, the pressure that just happened recently was... In New York, one of the cities, you went to the Citibank branch on 57th and Park, I think it was, and you, a couple of your people chained themselves to the door.
Right. We do use direct action in conjunction with a number of other methods to make our message heard to these corporations in the spirit of Gandhi and Martin Luther King. Nonviolent civil disobedience can send a powerful message to these corporations, especially one as enormous and sometimes deaf as Citibank can be. And the action in New York was very successful. We had four young, brave activists chain themselves to one of the Citibank branches in an effort to close it down for business that day so that no more unwitting customers of Citibank would allow their money to be funneled through Citibank into rainforest destruction and global warming.
Right.
Now, the thing that's interesting, Dave, is that this was the third such action this month, in fact. In San Francisco, we had 20 people chain themselves to four different bank branches, and in D.C., similarly, we had the same protest outside of the bank branch downtown.
Right.
So what we're seeing is growing momentum around this campaign and increasing numbers of people willing to come together and tell Citibank, not with my money. You can no longer fund this kind of rainforest destruction with my money.
Yeah, that, you know, Bernard was saying earlier that visiting these forests is kind of a spiritual experience, and it is so sad that these corporations have no compunction about just clear-cutting these things without any problem. I guess the only thing in the way of them are you guys and a couple of other organizations.
Right. Well, and, you know, one thing that we have to remember is we have our partners in the Global South, the people that are most directly affected by this blight. There are hundreds and thousands of indigenous and forest-dwelling people that are mounting this type of resistance, literally fighting for their lives every day. So, you know, when we do our work, we really need to pay homage and honor to those that are most directly impacted.
Right, so you're not just helping to protect the trees, you're helping to protect entire populations.
Absolutely.
That's
and one of the things that the world needs to know about is that these indigenous cultures sometimes hold the key to ancient wisdom about medicinal plants, about rainforest foods that can feed a number of populations around the world, and without them, when they go extinct or when they're transplanted, we lose that ancient wisdom.
Right, right. Now, this is a huge business that we're talking about, and this is from that journal article. Indonesia's forestry exports last year stood at roughly $9.1 billion. So we're talking big. That's a lot of money.
Well, and huge business translates into huge losses on the ground for the forest. By some estimates, the forest in Sarawak, which is an island in Indonesia, will be gone by 2005. Even President Megawati of Indonesia recognized that the time had come to call for a moratorium on logging in her country because the stakes are so high at this point. And unfortunately, as you noted, we're not seeing that translate into a transition in business practices by Citigroup and its ilk.
Right.
Citigroup is still one of the top investors in not only the logging industry in Indonesia through corrupt companies there like Asia Pulp and Paper and London Sumatra, but it's also a top holder of debt in that country. And as you've noted, as we started the program, the interplay between the corporate debt in Indonesia and the logging operations is really creates a tragic combination, which forces a lot of these companies on the ground to continue to operate at breakneck speed. In fact, one of the reports I was looking at into Kiat, which is a subsidiary of Asia Pulp and Paper in Sumatra, and, and one of the companies that Citigroup is heavily invested in.
And that runs the largest pulp mill in the world.
Largest pulp mill in the world is currently operating at 120% of its design capacity in order to try and pay back this debt.
Right.
And again, you know, as you noted, there's that other strand, which is the illegal logging. There's not enough wood surrounding these pulp mills and these plantations to feed them at that rate. So they end up buying from contractors, unable to trace the origin of this wood, which is largely coming from indigenous land or and or protect what's supposed to be protected ecosystems.
Right.
By some estimates, up to 80% of the wood coming out of Indonesia is illegally harvested, and at the expense of not only indigenous people, but some of our favorite large rainforest species like the Asian elephant, the Sumatran tiger, the rhinoceros, and the endangered orangutan.
That's unbelievable. I mean, Citibank, or Citigroup, as they're now called after their merger, Travelers with Citicorp. They're making money hand over fist, and I guess this is one of the reasons they are. It says here in the latest Business Week, Citi still makes a mint, nearly $13 billion of net income in the first 9 months of 2002.
Mm-hmm.
That's net income.
Absolutely.
That's unbelievable.
We're seeing this mega bank, Citibank, line its own executive pockets with profits not only from the rainforest and indigenous people at the expense of our global environment, but more recently, as we've seen, as they've come under investigation by four separate regulatory boards, at the expense of everyday people's 401ks. They've been implicated in the Enron scandal and the WorldCom scandal. And so Sandy Weill, the CEO, we're seeing him lead a business with no ethics whatsoever.
Right.
And as we say, they are corrupt on the inside, as has come out over the last year, and they're using that to fund destruction on the outside.
Right.
And I think the American people are just fed up. 9 out of 10 polled Americans really want these wild places preserved. And what we're saying to them is, if you really want to do something for the environment, cut up your Citibank card. Tell Citibank, not with my money.
Right. I read that. That's great. That letter that you have on your website, which is, by the way, www.ran.org. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Ran. Yes, Sandy Weill, who we're talking about. And we had last week Arthur Levitt, former chairman of the SEC, on. He was a partner with Sandy Weill for 13 years when he first started out in the business. Sandy Weill was born in 1933 in Brooklyn, in the Bensonhurst section, in a yellow stucco house on Bay 26th Street near Gravesend Bay. And yes, he does have a long history of being ruthless, of acquiring companies, of firing people, which is one of the ways that he's been able to accumulate the money that he has. I think he was paid in the decade of 1990 to 2000, somewhere along the lines, and this is his income, of several billion dollars. You know, so a lot of this money is, of course, coming from these operations that you're talking about, and it really is a shame that that he gets away with it. But he's in a lot of trouble, and hopefully this is going to put a lot of pressure on him.
And yeah, what we like to point out is that Citigroup is operating out of alignment with modern social values. The types of reform and transition in their business practices that people are calling for, especially around the environmental issues, are being done. The tide is turning. We're seeing the top European banks like ABN AMRO put into place specific policies that no longer allow them to lend to exactly these types of extractive industries and high conservation value forest ecosystems.
Right.
They will no longer lend to mining or fossil fuel exploration or logging because businesses are recognizing that good environmental sense makes good long-term economic sense.
Right, and the pressure that you're putting on them hopefully is doing something. I mean, you have... Don't you have wanted, dead or alive? Not dead or alive, but wanted posters for Sandy Weill?
Yeah, definitely not dead or alive.
No.
We are nonviolent.
Right, exactly. I was thinking of the Osama bin Laden farce.
Right, I have seen that one.
Yeah.
No, we do. You know, we really think that it's time to put names to this type of destruction. There are some key power holders in U.S. corporations and U.S. institutions that... Should they make the decision to do the right thing by the forest and by the global environment, the ripple effects would be magnificent. And Sandy Weill, the CEO of Citigroup, is certainly one of those individuals. In fact, what he has is an opportunity to leave us with a new environmental legacy that says that as a world leader, as a business leader, I am going to do the right thing by the forest and by the future generations, by my children and my grandchildren who are going to inherit this world,
right.
That the bottom line is not absolutely where it's at, that we also need to redefine profit so that it means a healthy and sound world for the next generation.
Right. It seems like Cindy Weill is more concerned with profit. I mean, Citigroup is the largest financial institution in the world. Sandy Weill put together Citigroup in violation of law. The Bank Holding Company Act of 1956, plus the Glass-Steagall Act of 1933, which separated investment and commercial banking. So it seems like there's a lot of politicians, because Robert Rubin, after he left being the Secretary of the Treasury under the Clinton administration, he went and joined Citigroup's board in some kind of honorary position as probably a payoff for helping dismantle the Glass-Steagall Act. Which a lot of people believe has led to the bubble and the subsequent deflation and the destruction of and carnage of people's 401k accounts. So it seems like Sandy Weill is a favorite of Washington, D.C. So I think it's going to be tough to get him in line with what you're talking about. Also, by law, he's required to step down from his position over at Citigroup. At age 72, and in March he'll be 70. Do you think pressure is going to come to bear before he reaches that 72 year of age, or before he's forced to possibly resign because of all the scandals that have been going on?
I think pressure is already coming to bear. I think the cracks are beginning to show on what has been a fairly unblemished corporate reputation. I mean, The Economist this month says is Weill outward bound. And I think he's really feeling the heat about reviving his reputation. Nobody wants to go out with a black mark on their record. And that's why we continue to say to him he has a real opportunity to do the right thing before he retires.
Right.
And set a new tenor for the entire financial industry around the world.
Right. I'll do my part to see if I can get this message to him through the people that I know. What can your average person do to help out in this effort?
Well, absolutely, as you said, visit www.ran.org, where we have a whole list of things that people can do to let Citibank hear their very clear message. We're really encouraging everyone to either cut up their Citibank card. If you cut it up, make sure you send Citibank half of it with a clear letter about why you're doing it, and send us half, because we are collecting tens of thousands of cards, which we will then deliver to them. And educate your neighbor. I mean, that's really the key to making this whole effort work, is that a lot of people just don't know that their money is being used to fund this kind of environmental destruction. And once they know, they're willing to speak out and take a stand against it.
Right. Well, thanks to WBAI and Bernard and Sharan, a wake-up call. Hopefully this message is getting out to a lot of people. And of course, you have a letter on the website to Sandy Weill with his address and Dear Mr. Weill, and you're explaining why you are returning half of the card to him. So people can go to the website and they can just simply print out that message, cut their card in half, and pop it in an envelope, and hopefully Sandy will be inundated with credit cards.
Absolutely. The power of collective voice cannot be underestimated, and Sandy Weill is hearing us, and he will continue to hear us until he does the right thing by the forest and the global environment.
That's cool. Elise, I want to thank you so much for coming on, and thank you so much for doing what you're doing. I mean, you really are having an effect. Elise Hoag of the Rainforest Action Network, and she is the Global Finance Campaign Director. Thanks so much, Elise.
Thank you, Dave, for